You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com. Hi, everybody. I'm Nadira Jamal, and welcome to episode 30 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. The Clubhouse is a place where dancers can get together and get all of that information that's hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you want to get help with the what, so things like moves and combinations and choreographies, there are a lot of resources out there for you. But if you're looking for help with the why and the how, so musicality, stagecraft, performance skills, business, culture, that can be a little bit trickier to get. So every month on this show, I interview a different guest expert on a nice geeky topic. And we always have time for question and answer so you can geek out too. So if you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, you are in the right place. My guest today is Terry Allred. Terry came to study belly dance after a head injury left her unable to work or take care of her family. Her physical therapist suggested taking a dance class to help with dizziness and balance. When she walked into her first belly dance class, she knew she was home. Having grown up dancing ballet and jazz since kindergarten, she was immediately drawn by the control and fascinated by the abandon of belly dance. She studied Egyptian, Turkish, Lebanese, Persian, Indian, hula, and Polynesian dance, ultimately landing firmly in American tribal style. And for the record, anytime I say American tribal style or ATS, I want you to imagine that little R trademark sign, because American tribal style is a registered trademark. She's an FCBD sister studio, the owner of Third Eye Tribal and Third Eye Tribal Consulting in Minnesota, and the business consultant for Fat Chance Belly Dance, also trademark. She's also the program manager and advertising director for the ATS magazine published by FCBD, and the coordinator for ATS Homecoming. She has recently published a book, I Belly Dance Because, The Transformative Power of Dance, and an instructional DVD, ATS with Props, Veil, Fan, and Basket. You can follow her reflections on life and dance via her Third Eye Tribal blog with her sister, Lisa Allred. And Terry, can you tell us what website folks can find that at?
Yes, they can find that at www.thirdeyetribal.com.
Excellent. So because of her expertise in props and ATS, that's what Terry and I are going to talk about today. So thanks so much for coming, Terry.
Thank you for having me.
So can you tell us a little bit about your background in ATS to start us off?
Well, as you mentioned in my introduction, I came to belly dance primarily doing Egyptian cabaret belly dance and moved my way into fusion and American tribal style. So I studied American tribal style with Dawn Rooker, who is one of my co-collaborators on the instructional props DVD when I lived in North Carolina. And at that point, Carolina hadn't really codified the vocabulary yet. So people were just still kind of doing their own thing in American tribal style. So the American tribal style that I was initially introduced with was not the exact version that it is today. So I started with the group improvisation and then quickly became interested in really learning from Carolina and experiencing American tribal style as she conceived it. And about that time, she was pulling it all together so that the dancers around the world would know what was her vocabulary and what was her intent versus what other people had done as spinoffs from that. So I guess I've been exclusively dancing American tribal style for the last 3.5 years or so, although I was doing it a little bit before when I was still doing other styles as well.
Mm-hmm. And what got you interested in dancing with props?
Well, as a trained Egyptian dancer, we used the veil a lot. We used it for entrances, even if we weren't going to dance with the veil. So I was introduced to the veil pretty early on in my training. And I was fascinated with how I could transfer that knowledge into the American tribal style group improvisational method. I was also exposed to dancing with swords and baskets and canes and fire And let's see what else. Wings, fans, all of that stuff through my Egyptian infusion training. And I just always felt like that, particularly for a local dance group trying to create 30-minute or an hour shows, that being able to have some proficiency in props really gave the audience an additional dynamic presence to the dance.
Which is exactly why we use props in cabaret as well, right? You need to once in a while. That's one of the things that I love about the diversity in belly dance is there are so many different aesthetics and different approaches, but at the end of the day, we're all trying to use the same like underlying compositional and stagecraft principles just to make the audience happy. That's all we're trying to do.
Right, exactly. And sometimes we even start a set with a prop just to get the audience's attention, say if we're at a big street festival, and we know that veils or fans or even zills, the call of the musical instrument will bring people in so that then they'll be physically where we want them to be to watch the rest of our show.
So can you tell us about some of the props that are commonly used in ATS, so things that are seen regularly?
Yes. Well, I mean, the most obvious of that is the finger cymbals or zills or sagats. They're called different things in different languages. But American tribal style is classified from a teaching and learning perspective as slow or fast in terms of the composition and the way that we perform. And we wear zills for either slow or fast performances, and then we play them in fast performances. And that's pretty standard. It's actually unusual to see dancers who are performing American tribal style without their finger cymbals on and without playing them. And so, you know, I know that in other styles, depending on your teacher and her or his comfort level with finger cymbals, you may or may not be exposed to them. I was really lucky that my first Egyptian teacher started us off playing finger cymbals as soon as I walked into the classroom. But a lot of people haven't ever had that experience before. In American tribal style, because the finger cymbals are so integral to the performance, everybody learns how to use them. We don't have as many complex patterns as I knew when I was regularly dancing and performing Egyptian style. We really only use about two regularly and four at any given point. But the use of and presence of finger cymbals is, of course, the most important and well-known prop for American tribal style. In fact, I even hesitate to call it a prop because it's so much a part of the dance, and I think of props as kind of an add-on, and they're so much at the heart of the dance that they're not really an add-on at all.
I was raised in a similar way in my dance lineage, and I sometimes have tribal dancers who come to my class specifically to break into cabaret venues, and I'm always impressed at how well they play. You know, that's usually the hard part is, you know, are you ready for my dance class? Well, can you play and dance at the same time? And the tribal ladies never have any trouble with that. So,
yes.
You know, even
and
if
it is
you're
so
one of those
hard.
Folks who's on the fence, you know, if you're one of those folks who's on the fence about what style you want to get into, zills are just such a great skill to build.
Right. Yeah, I agree. You know, and so the zills are the most obvious prop in American tribal style, but you know, a lot of American tribal style dancers use the sword as well. It really lends itself to the aesthetic expression of ATS and the strong kind of powerful presence that is often expressed by American tribal style dancers. So I think the sword is, you know, maybe one of the next props that you would see the most. And then the basket, because the basket is also very earthy and very folkloric, and aesthetically is quite well incorporated into the performance of ATS. So zills for sure, and then the sword and basket are kind of maybe the second and third props that you would see when normally seeing American tribal style dancers.
And are there any less common props that get used in an ATS context?
Yes. Well, Bail, the prop that I have just incorporated into my instructional DVD, has been used historically in American tribal style, but usually only in choreography. And I know a lot of people think, well, there is no choreography in American tribal style, and that's not exactly true. Sometimes if groups have really large stage performances, very important, or maybe they are utilizing a prop that does not lend itself well to improvisation, or maybe they are wanting to have touch points within their improvisational dance where the music presents a very specific phrasing and they want that part choreographed. So choreography can be a part of American tribal style. And in the past, most people have used Bail in the context of choreographed moves. So when I was trying to create my improvisational vocabulary, I really wanted to have the Bail be able to be integrated into the actual improvisation. So I think Bail as an improvisational prop is relatively new. Then my other cohort for the instructional DVD, Elizabeth Fish, also known fondly as Super Beth to her fans. She's of Tamarind Tribal in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She, for the last 5 years or so, has been using silk fans. And they're not the long fan veils that we often use in Egyptian cabaret, but they're smaller silk fans. And as to my knowledge, she's the first one who did it and has now really expanded the use of these fans as a really lovely prop within American tribal style that's very unique. And then a lot of people are using candles and flames in American tribal style. I have a good friend, Gaia Sophia in Pine River, Minnesota, who does a lot of palm torches and other fire performance. You know, we all know as performers that there are limited places where you can actually do fire performances because most of the time community centers and hotels won't let you in with your flames. but fire is being more and more incorporated into the movement vocabulary of American tribal style. I haven't actually, I use candles, but I've not used torches or palm torches or anything yet, but that's next on my list because it's really intriguing to me and so unbelievably beautiful.
I am a really big fan of that look, and I know I and a lot of dancers who can't use actual fire, we get those little fake flickering candle LED lights.
Yes,
as long as they're in frosted glass, they look real.
Yeah, that's what
I've even
do.
Seen ones that have a sensor where if you blow on them, they go out.
Oh, cool. No, I haven't seen that. I'll have to look into that. That's great.
Those are more expensive than the regular ones I bought at Walgreens.
Yeah, I'm sure. And then the only other kind of prop, which is also an interesting one that's kind of made its way into the American tribal style vocabulary right now, is the skirt. So a lot of people use skirts for fusion dancing, Romani dancing, but people have started incorporating the big, full 25-yard skirts into dancing American tribal style. And there's a woman who is in Michigan, Christina Clark, who is producing a DVD series on incorporating the skirt into American tribal style. So there's a lot of really exciting and energetic people. There's several other people around the country who are doing it, incorporating the skirt into it. But it's really beautiful because they're taking an important piece of the costuming and utilizing it as you would a veil or a fan or any other prop, and they're doing it improvisationally. So it's not a choreography. It's all taking the basic moves of American tribal style and adapting the use of the skirt to enhance those movements.
Mm-hmm. And we talk about this, you know, official ATS format versus the more unofficial kind. How does prop use fit into these different flavors of tribal.
Yeah. Well, so for those who are not familiar with Fat Chance Belly Dance, Carolina Naricchio Bowman created American Tribal Style 25 years ago in San Francisco. It was a very countercultural endeavor at that point, really mostly in bars, at tattoo parlors, and kind of in the underground in San Francisco. And she was maybe more surprised than anyone that it's, you know, caught on across the world and become so popular. So she realized, I don't know, about 6 years ago or so, that she needed to kind of pull things in and get straight for everybody what was her stuff and what was the just plethora of amazing and wonderful offshoots that were coming from it. So she decided to kind of codify the basic movements, fast and slow movements, and produced a DVD series, which you could get online at Fat Chance Belly Dance. And so within this DVD series, or now there's online classes via a service called Powhow, within the series you can learn the entire Fat Chance Belly Dance American Tribal Style movement catalog. So you can learn all the fast moves, all the slow moves, and the important part of having kind of that home base of movements is that you can get together with any dancer around the world and dance, whether they speak English, whether they speak Russian, no matter what language they speak, you can all get together and you can dance with each other without rehearsal, without any prep time, without anything. You can just put on the music and everybody can dance together. It's so amazingly exciting. Last year, I pulled together our first ATS Homecoming Conference, and we had dancers from 15 countries, and they were all dancing together, and they didn't all speak the same language, but because ATS is a universal language, they were able to communicate with each other. And so there's always going to be the foundational moves, the moves that were created by Carolina and the rest of her colleagues and students and teachers at Fat Chance Belly Dance. And then, because we're all artistic people and we come to dance to express ourselves, there's another layer that happens on top of American Tribal Style, the basic movements, and that's what we call movement dialect. So that's kind of the key term in our community. And movement dialect are the inevitable and natural evolution of moves that happen sometimes regionally, sometimes just within a specific dance troupe or group. And so, for instance, because a veil is not a normal part of the ATS vocabulary, my veil instruction and DVD is considered a movement dialect. Same thing with the sword. So any prop use adjust the movements. It adjusts the basic movements, so they're considered movement dialects. But it's not only props. Movement dialects can be maybe I do a move with a spin instead of a move that normally has a half turn. Or, you know, so it's all kinds of modifications of the basic movements. And then those of us who dance know that if we're improving with people we don't know, then we stick to the basic, the foundational movements. I wouldn't just throw in a veil with a group of strangers, or I wouldn't throw in one of my own unique movements that I've created here in Rochester, Minnesota, if I was dancing with strangers. So the props fit into that second layer of movement dialect that is unique to their own, everybody's own community. Now, there are some people who have published instructional DVDs, like, you know, myself, I've published the instructional DVD with Dawn Rucker from North Carolina and Beth Fish from Milwaukee. And so if people want to learn about veil, basket, or fan, then we've kind of created a system that everybody can use. Not that everybody has to, but they certainly can. And then the Davina Tribal Collective created a DVD for use with sword. And a lot of people, including my own troupe, uses that as the framework for our sword work. and then, like I said, Christina's DVD for Skirt. So there are some leaders in the American tribal style movement who are kind of trying to get a shared vocabulary for the different integration of props. And it seems to be working. I mean, a lot of people have I know, have bought our DVD, and we've been traveling a lot and training people. And so one day it may be that I can get together with strangers and do veil performances.
Excellent. And, you know, how has the use of props evolved throughout the years? Was there a particular timeline or certain ways that props became more common or less common?
Right. Well, you know, that's very interesting. Fat Chance has always put on, or many years, put on a pretty big show. And a lot of the integration of the props came from needing some variety in a big stage show. And so you'll see veils and swords and baskets in some of these stage shows as a means to express American tribal style in a more diverse way to entertain the audience. And then, of course, a lot of the surrounding, now we call them sister studios, the people who are trained and certified to teach American tribal style, they started adding props too. I think for a while, people were kind of scared to share, or maybe scared isn't the right word, maybe a little intimidated to share things that they were doing beyond kind of the basic sword or basket with Carolina because they weren't sure how she would feel about it. And then about a year or so ago, when we came up with the term movement dialect, and then we invited several dancers, myself included, and Dawn and Beth, to perform and to teach at the first ATS homecoming using our props, which were not the standard props that people use. And so really in the last, I'd say 2 years, there's been a pretty big explosion of the introduction of props into American tribal style dancing, because now everybody knows that as long as we keep to the aesthetics that Carolina determined and wants to have ATS represent, then she's going to be really supportive. And I will say that of all the instructional DVDs that I've mentioned so far since we've been talking, Carolina has given her approval, and in our case, she assisted. She flew to North Carolina and assisted with the filming and the project.
Now I'd like to move a little bit more towards the how-to aspect. You know, as a cabaret soloist, I can pretty much do anything I want with a prop, as if I can hurt somebody or rip my costume. But, you know, in the little bit of, you know, taste of ATS experience that I've had, one thing that I've been really impressed by is just how cleverly the structure has been built up to facilitate the group improv. So, you know, how does the structure of the ATS format affect how you use props?
Right. Well, a lot. So for those who don't know, the structure of American tribal style is group improvisation. There's always a leader, and that leader stands to the left front of the other dancers. And leadership can change and certainly rotate, but the leader is the one that calls all the shots, you know, kind of gives the game plan of what's going to happen. Of course, it's all nonverbal, so there's not actually any calling of the shots being done. But so we all know the same moves. Theoretically, we've all been practicing with our props so that we know the adjustments and adaptations that we need to do with the movements. We know that, say, if we have a sword balanced on our head, that we need to do the turns very slowly so that everybody can catch up. So we take the foundational principles of group improvisation and we modify them so that they can be successful with the addition of props. So I'll give you a really hilarious example. So when Super Beth teaches her fan workshops, when we use fans, we sometimes just hold the fan still, and sometimes we flutter the fans as we're doing different movements. And I was performing fans for an audience the other day, and one woman came up to me and she said, how on earth do you know when to flutter the fans and when to keep them still? And the answer is you don't. You follow the leader. But I think from the audience's perspective, it still looks really mesmerized and planned. But the fact is, the leader just does the movement in traditional, or, you know, does whatever the adjustment is with the prop, a fraction of a second before everybody else picks it up. I mean, it really is a team sport, and you really do have to pay attention to everybody else. So, I mean, in some ways, adding props adds a whole new dimension because, you know, you got to watch out for those points on the swords. You can't be too close together or you're going to stab each other, just like with choreography that you do in fusion or cabaret dance. And, you know, you have to do your spacing a little bit wider if you have two fans that are flying all over the place, and you have to use a larger stage area. Maybe you can't utilize your prop because the stage is too small. So there's lots of little minor adjustments that we make, but for the most part, all of us who are integrating props into American Tribal Style in a more kind of formal way through providing instruction and creating DVDs, all of us are making sure that our props are enhancing the dance as opposed to being an element of the dance in and of themselves. So for instance, for my veil, I don't do any of the cascades, the veil cascades that I used to do in cabaret dance. I don't do a lot of flipping or twisting or throwing the veil, because really I've designed all of my movements so that the veil is just an enhancement to the basic movements. And so there's not a lot of, you know, waterfalls or cascades or throwing of the veil or any of the things that were so lovely and dramatic that I used to do when I was a solo performer as well. So those are just some of the ways that we adapt. Each prop has its own adaptation, but because we're dancing in a group, the only adaptation that I would say is consistent among all the props is that we have to have more room, or else we have to only dance with two or three people if the stage is small.
I imagine the sight lines also really matter. And, you know, again, my experience with tribal is very, very limited. But, you know, the big message that I took away is you always have to be able to see the leader's right hip.
Yes. Well, yes, that is partly true. So you always have to be able to see the leader. But most of the movements are adapted in such a way that you can see the cue from the upper body. So let's talk just no props at this point. Even if you don't have any props other than your finger symbol, I think almost all, if not all, of the cues are upper body. So it's an arm or a wrist or the way that the shoulders move. We also layer the hand floreo over our slow movements for the very purpose of that way your followers can watch what your hand's doing, and the hand is immediately connected to the hips. So for instance, if I have my left arm out and I lift my pinky to initiate the hand floreo, that means that my left hip is lifting at the same time. So I don't actually have to look at the rear end of the person in front of me when I'm following. I can see what's happening just by looking at their hand. So that's one of the ways that we interact with each other without, you know, without having to lower our heads when we're dancing. So then when you add the prop to it, we do a couple of things to make the cues more noticeable. For the veil, we will often say if you're lifting your wrist, we'll make it more enunciated or a little bit more dramatic because the veil obscures the whole, the whole back of the body. And we use thin veils, so we try to make sure that we use veils that you can see through, but there's still a good bit of obscuring that happens. The other thing that we do when we use props is everyone who is dancing cues the move. So lots of times if there isn't any visibility issue, the leader will cue the moves, and the follower may or may not share that cue with the other followers. But when we incorporate props into the dance, every single person has to do the cue, because the person, say, in the fourth position, which is the back position furthest away from the leader, may not be able to see the leader's cue, but they may be able to see the person in third position's cue. So we try to make sure that that we are all cueing either with a look to the right or a lift of the wrist or a swing of the shoulders forward. You know, there's lots of different ways that we cue, but instead of letting the leader be the only one who does it and it's optional for the followers, we make sure that everybody's cueing it, so that way the message, you know, it's like playing telephone. You want the message to get to the person at the end of the line.
That's clever. So what are some of the special challenges of each of the props that folks can incorporate?
Yeah. Well, let's start with swords. So swords are very, very popular in American tribal style. They are very often used in slow performances, but I have seen some people in the last couple of years starting to incorporate sword into their fast performances. And so as with any prop, the potential for it to fall is great, even if you've practiced. And when you're dancing with a group or with improvisation, if one person's sword falls, then it can be dangerous for the other people who are dancing. So one of the things that we do with swords is we make sure that it doesn't get to that point. You know, like if a sword starts feeling a little wobbly, then we would go ahead and encourage the dancer to adjust it and stabilize it rather than just hoping that it doesn't fall. Because if it falls, it could stab the person's foot next to her. So, you know, there's a little bit more caution about the sword as a prop. We also make sure that we have plenty of room between the dancers so that that way we don't stab or hit anybody. And when we use the sword, we keep it under, you know, pretty tight control. So there's not a lot of swinging or, you know, sometimes I see dancers who will really do wide arcs with the sword. And the sword is really kept within kind of the center of the set, kind of the personal space of the dancer, so that that way there's less chance for injury. In fact, sometimes our studded bracelets cause more injury than our props because we're extra careful with the props. I heard a story the other day about someone who lost a tooth as a result of a studded bracelet.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So anyway, so with sword, those are the kind of two major things that we do to adapt and make it safe. And then, you know, I mean, with any movement, while you've got a sword balanced on your head in particular, we definitely slow things down so that that way everybody can succeed in the turning and still use some of the same tricks that cabaret dancers use or fusion dancers use, like putting one arm in front and one arm behind when you're turning so that it stabilizes the sword, but the audience can't really see that that's what you're doing, and things like that. And then, of course, in American tribal style with the sword, a lot of dancers wear turbans. It's a very classic look. And as you probably know, head coverings really help with stabilizing your sword. And so I personally don't wear turbans, but sometimes if I'm dancing with a sword or a basket and I'm going to be balancing, I will use kind of a fabric headband to give myself a little bit of extra stability for the balancing. So particularly the dancers who wear the full turbans, there can be a good amount of padding and stability when you put that sword up there, particularly if the turban's constructed in a way for the sword to fit, you know, kind of in a crevice between the material. So in that sense, we certainly have an edge, on cabaret dancers because of our turbans. So the other, as I said, most common prop in American travel style is the basket. And I never used baskets when I was a cabaret dancer. I did some with folkloric and some with fusion. But the baskets, you know, it's really similar to the sword in terms of the head coverings helping with the balancing. I mean, with any improvisational dance, the leader has to be very deliberate about taking the basket from one position to the other. So like when Dawn Ruckert teaches her baskets, one of the things that she teaches people is to use four counts to move the basket, say, from a shoulder hold to a center hold, or from your head back to your center point. Because one of the things that happens with props when you're leading or following is if the leader does things too quickly, the followers can't keep up. So like if the leader had the basket on her head and just naturally took it off in one count and brought it down in the second count, the followers can't, I mean, often we're one count behind. So it really is hard if the leader doesn't take extra care in transitioning the prop in a little bit slower manner than maybe you would do if you were dancing by yourself, because nobody has to follow you. So when
but,
I'm
you know,
teaching
as,
props,
as an audience member, I love watching somebody really take their time shifting their prop. You know,
yeah,
just like they make
yeah.
a huge deal out of it. It to me, that's more satisfying.
Exactly, exactly, yes. And one of the things we teach, just like in other disciplines, is, you know, you don't put your sword up there and balance it in four counts, then they know it's not hard. You know, you got to at least look like it's creating some type of effort to get that sword balanced or get that balance, that basket balanced. If it's too easy, then you've just basically undercut your show womanship.
Mm-hmm.
So people get excited, they get nervous, and they do fast things with their props when they're leading. So that's one of the things when I'm teaching props, I really try to work hard with people on slowing it down. You can do the movements quickly once you started the movement, but slow down those transitions so that way everybody can catch up with you. And the baskets, they're not too difficult to work with in group improvisation. They're actually, because they don't take up a huge amount of space, you don't really need a lot of extra stage space. So in my opinion, they're maybe the easiest prop. I'm not saying that they're easy to master, but maybe need the least adaptation of all of the props. Of course, anytime we're using props, we have to adapt the structure of the movement, because if you're holding onto a basket with two hands, then one hand can't be in front of you and one beside you. You know, so we're always adapting the structure of the movement with the prop. But once you've done that, the basket is not, I think it might be the easiest to actually execute on the stage of all the other props. And then the veil, I think I mentioned before that because the veil obscures the back of the body and we're doing the leading and following, the veil can really be a challenge for people. And I recommend that people dance in duets first so that way they can, you know, get a sense of seeing another person's cue and really being able to react to it. And then they add a third person, and only after much rehearsal and practice, they add that fourth person. And in American tribal style, you can dance with two, three, or four people in that featured dance position. And so it's certainly legal to just dance with two or three. And with the veil, I feel like it's easier to do that while you're just getting started learning to master the prop. And one of the things that that my cabaret training really helped me with was, what do you do if you drop the veil? What if the veil snags on your costume? What if you drop one hand? How do you recover from all of those things? And, it was horrifying as a cabaret dancer to think about it, but it's even more horrifying as an ATS dancer because you've got people all around you who are still moving. So,
yeah, when you're a soloist, you can pretend you meant to do it.
Exactly. You can pretend you meant to do it. You can go off and do something else, pick it up later. No harm, no foul. But one of the things that I teach when I'm teaching the veil is if you drop your veil or even one corner of it, the first thing you have to do is pick it up. Otherwise, somebody might trip and fall. And then you got a much bigger problem on your hands than just dropping the veil. So, and then the veil, just like with the fans, you need more space. You need space because that line of vision is really, really obstructed. If we are doing a tuck seam, which is basically just a figure eight, is what we call figure eight in American tribal style. If we're doing a tuck seam and we have our arms in a high V and the veil is down, then it's really hard for the followers to see what's going on if there's not enough distance between the dancers so that, that really, really crucial line of sight is there. And then with the veil also, we have to be careful not to do anything too fast because the followers are almost always a half a beat behind and it's hard to catch up if you've started a move using the veil. And then the last, well, I guess the fans and the skirt are the other two props that I mentioned. The fans are really fun and really quite different than when I used to use fan veils for cabaret dance. They are sassy and very spirited and can really bring up the energy in a performance. But the modifications necessary to the basic movements are pretty significant. And so I think they might be even the most hard prop to integrate into your ATS. I've done all of the props at this point, except the fire torches. And I would say that the fans are definitely the most difficult, but very, very rewarding. And the line of sight is an issue with the fans because they take up a lot of space just like the veil does. And then you really have to have a big enough stage to be able to extend your arms because the fans add another 16 inches or so to each side of your arm. And so it's really easy to not have enough room if you don't have a large stage. Particularly auditorium stages or big stages the fans are great for, but not so much a small restaurant or bar, for sure. And then the last one that I mentioned was the skirt. And, you know, if you drop your skirt, nothing bad is going to happen. So in that respect, it might be the least stressful prop to work with. But it takes an incredible amount of upper body and arm strength to hold those skirts up. And so that can really be a challenge for dancers to try to, particularly in American tribal style, because our carriage is a very flamenco carriage. So when I used to do other skirt dances, choreographed Romani skirt dances, you know, your arms can be down a little bit and your skirt can kind of swish. But in American tribal style, you have to hold the posture of the chest lifted, shoulders back, and arms lifted at shoulder height. And to hold the weight of a skirt in that posture is really, really difficult.
I imagine space may also be an issue.
Yep, space is an issue with the skirts too. And lots of times, if you know that you're going to be on a smaller stage, you can, you know, do a one-arm skirt hold. And there's lots of different moves that can be modified. Say the same given move can be done without holding the skirt, can be done with one arm holding the skirt, or can be done with the two arms holding the skirt. And the followers take the leader's cue. So if you were in a small space, then you could modify accordingly. So in some ways, it does take a lot of room, particularly if you're using the two arm skirt hold. But if you show up to a venue, a performance venue, and see you don't have a lot of room, you don't have to abandon the skirt. You can just modify it and choose different movements.
And that's one of the awesome things about the group improv structure is you can do that. It's not like you spent 3 months working on your choreography and you have to change everything.
It is so true. It is so true. And for lots of people, it's scary, the whole improvisation. And then for some people like me, it's exhilarating. I love not knowing what's going to happen next. That is really fun to me.
Totally different energy.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so we've been talking mostly about, the structural and logistical issues around props. So I'd like to talk about aesthetics a little bit. How do the particular aesthetics of ATS affect how you use these props?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. And my comment about the upper body carriage is a really great segue into this, because American tribal style aesthetics are very different than fusion and cabaret, primarily because of the carriage of the upper body. And the upper body is held in a flamenco-like position where to some people it looks like your chest is so lifted that the back is arched. That's not actually what's happening, but the chest is very lifted and the arms are very strong. And, they can come down off of shoulder height to do movements, but the default is in that really strong flamenco, open arm, strong posture, very sassy upper body carriage. And so when you incorporate props into that, oftentimes people are used to a much lower arm position. And a lot of ATS dancers have also been dancers in other styles before. So it's really challenging to keep that upper body carriage while you are, incorporating the use of these props, particularly like I mentioned, the skirt or the ones that weigh a little bit more. The veil, even though you wouldn't think a veil weighed very much, it can be really exhausting too with that upper body position and making sure that the arms are lifted and strong throughout the whole veil performance. And it definitely takes a lot of practice. In terms of costuming, our costuming sometimes has to be modified too for the props. For the sword and the basket, not so much, other than what I mentioned before, that many people choose to wear turbans or full head coverings in an effort to keep the sword and the basket more balanced. The costume doesn't really have to be adjusted very much for the basket and the sword because there's no fabric, there's nothing that's going to catch when you're doing your movements. For the veil, I recommend that that people really simplify their costuming. I wear a decorated bra with fringe, but I don't wear cuff bracelets. I do wear bracelets, but I make sure that they are not, that they don't have any openings, because the veil can slide into one of those cuffs and get stuck. And so a lot of the aesthetic and the beauty of ATS is these beautiful, spiky, cuff, thick, silver or metal bracelets. And I really tell people to just lay off of the cuffs, in particular for their arms. And then the other thing that that we do with veils in American tribal style is we tend to only wear one skirt instead of two. So the bottom part of the costuming is pantaloons, full pantaloons that hang down onto the ground, and then two 25-yard skirts, and then usually multiple belts too. And so for veil, I often don't wear a belt at all. I'll wrap my skirt across my front and my back so that it's a little bit smaller, smaller circumference, so that the veil doesn't get caught up in the tucks or get caught on the fabric, or not really, it wouldn't get caught, but kind of get stuck and have its progress impeded by all that fabric. And then another thing, I saw that Shira had posted this today, talking about using a veil in cabaret with a velvet costume and how not to ever do it no matter what. It's so true. If you think you can do it, it's not going to come out well. And the same thing holds true for American tribal style. Wearing velvet cholis, which are the garments we wear under our bras, the veil just gets stuck on them. And, you know, so I just strongly suggest wearing cotton or lace cholis when you're dancing with the veil. So there are some, you know, relatively significant modifications we would make to the costuming and aesthetic when you use the veil. The fans have a little bit more of a sassy Spanish feel to them. So sometimes we even modify the music that we use when we use the fans. So we would use something with maybe a little bit more of a Spanish beat. I would not use traditional folkloric music because it just doesn't match. And there's even movements that we would not do. Some of the more earthy folkloric movements just don't, it's just not a good match for the fans. So we modify the movements and we modify the music when we incorporate the fans. And then sometimes we modify the costuming too, because the fans can be such vivid, bright, and beautiful colors that in order for them to show up, also we do this with veil, in order for it to show up, sometimes we'll wear black skirts with the fringe or the bottom, it's called dip dye. And so there's a vibrant color on the bottom, and then the whole top of the skirt is black. And so lots of times we'll match our veil or our fan to one of the vibrant colors at the bottom of the skirt, and that can have a really beautiful look. Whereas in traditional American tribal style, we might have lots and lots, a whole color explosion everywhere with printed skirts and different color underskirt and different color belts and different color choli. But we try to simplify the colors a little bit more so that the veils or the fans don't get lost into that, you know, that explosion of color that's characteristic of American tribal style costumes oftentimes. And then for the skirt, yeah, there's not really any costume modification for that other than you want a skirt that that is relatively easy to grab. And we have these skirts, we call them spinning skirts, and they have kind of a ribbon at the bottom, and the spinning skirts work really, really, really well for the skirt work. They're easy to grab. They look beautiful. They cut a little bit of a different line when you're working with them than a regular cotton skirt would. And just in my personal opinion, they're kind of the costume piece of choice for the skirt work. But other than choosing a skirt that looks beautiful while doing the skirt work, there's not really any modification that you need to make in using the skirt as a prop.
I'd like to take a little bit of a step back and just look at some of the larger considerations for groups in general. Now, what are some of the special challenges of using props in a group?
The first one is that if one person loses their prop or has a prop problem, in a choreography, it doesn't necessarily impact the other dancers. They keep dancing, that person gets it back together or, you know, picks up their prop and then just jumps right into the choreography where they left off. But when you are doing improvisational dance, the loss of or the faltering of someone with a prop can really wreak havoc on the group. And so I encourage people to practice, and we actually do in my workshops, we practice dropping a prop or dropping the veil when we're dancing. So I think that is maybe one of the biggest challenges for the group. The other challenge we talked of before is the whole line of sight thing. Because we're doing group improvisation, we have to be able to see the leader. And sometimes that means dancers adjusting from the position where they would typically be in. So we have kind of a grid, and we know that if one person is leading, we know kind of how everybody's position falls out behind that person. And so you might have to adjust and not be where you would normally supposed to be because you can't see if you're in that place. So there's some formation adjustments that end up occurring. As we said before, there's some movement adjustments. So if I know how to do, say, the Sara turn, which is one of our slow moves, When I add a veil to that, or I add a fan to that, or a basket, that move looks different. It has to be modified. So the group has to have practiced and agreed upon the modification they're going to use, whether they're using one that we've presented in our instructional DVD, or one that they've, you know, agreed upon in advance. So the spirit of the improvisational nature of ATS changes a little bit, because there's more planning that has to go into it when you're using a prop, and that can impact the group dynamic a little bit as well. But it can also really enrich the group dynamic. And when you add a prop, which makes the synchronicity really even more important, because if one person's hand is in the wrong place and you've got a fan in it, then it's like a flashing light, as opposed to if their hand's in the wrong place and there's nothing in it. So in some ways, I feel like it can really, really cement a group's dynamic and encourage synchronicity and help people to really get down to the nitty-gritty of the technique and the execution of movements, so that that way there's a cohesive presentation within the whole group. Because American Tribal Style isn't about, you know, one person up there, you know, kind of mugging for the audience and making faces and, you know, dancing kind of out there more than the rest. You know, we're all presenting a unified front. I mean, the goal is for the group to entertain, not for one person to entertain. And when you add props to that, it really kind of levels the playing field for skills and performance strengths, because everybody is striving for that unified look that the prop brings. So I actually think that props are an amazing teaching tool. You didn't ask me this, but I do think that props are an amazing teaching tool for helping a group to become more cohesive in their expression and in their performance.
Mm-hmm. And are there any other advantages of using props as a group?
You know, other than cohesiveness, and we talked about this at the beginning, that when you're structuring a set, particularly a long set for a performance, it really can impact the ability for the group to keep the audience's attention. And so it can empower people. The other thing that I found that is a great benefit for a group is that in every group, people are going to excel at different things. And like in my home troupe here in Rochester, Minnesota, there are two women who are fabulous at swords. I mean, they do double swords, they do fast swords, they do slow swords, they do everything. And I'm not fabulous at swords. Because of my head injury, I can't actually balance a sword on my head. It causes neck problems. And I've recently been working more towards being able to dance with the swords more. And it's really wonderful for them to be able to help me, the teacher and troop director, with what they're really proficient at. I'm proficient at veils, so I'm helping them with that. One of our other dance troop members has really taken a keen interest in the fans. And so we learned, of course, from Superbeth, but she's really been paying close attention and kind of helps us with the fans. So for the group dynamic, everybody can't be good at everything, and I have found that props really help help allow people to find a niche that they can be good at, take a little bit more leadership, take a little bit more ownership, and really contribute to the productivity and the artistic expression of the whole group. Whereas if you're just doing the movements without props, there's a teacher, there's a troop director maybe, or maybe there's a maybe it's a collaborative, but, you know, so everybody doesn't have as big of a place to shine. And that's one of the other things that I really love about the way that the integration of props into your performance group or even your classroom can really help people find different niches to be able to express themselves and you know, everybody has a favorite and everybody has one that they're more proficient at. And that can really help build competency and it can help build confidence within a group.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any tips for getting a group to adopt a new prop, whether it's to agree to try it out in the first place or to learn how to use them as a group?
Yeah. Well, I think that that the most important thing is to figure out what people are interested in using, because you know, it could be that your group has no interest in swords whatsoever. They think that they are, you know, they're too much weaponry and they can give a message of violence and they don't want to touch them. So incorporating swords would not be wise. So I think, you know, seeing what all the options are, and then finding out what the interest is. Also, there's cost. There's a good bit of cost when you add props into the dance performance, because everybody needs to have one within your group. So maybe you want to add a prop that's going to be a little bit less expensive than another prop. Swords are pretty pricey. Baskets don't have to be pricey. So maybe the basket is a good place to start. In terms of ease of use, I think any prop can be, you know, there's plenty of instructional DVDs, as I've said, and mentioned the different people who have done them. You know, skirts are pretty easy because you got one on anyway. If you're an American travel style dancer, you wouldn't ever dance without a 25-yard skirt. So there's no cost at all associated with that beyond the cost that you've already put in to put your costume together. So I'll just say, find out what people are interested in, try out a couple of different things, look at performances on YouTube with people utilizing different props, and see what people are interested in. And lots of times you can get a local teacher to come in and do a sampler for you. When I travel across the country and teach, I only teach veil, and Beth teaches fans and Dawn teaches baskets, but locally I will do samplers of all three props and add the sword. I mean, I'll do samplers of all kinds of props. And there are teachers like that all over the country who are proficient in using multiple props. And it would be fun just to have those people come in and give your own dance group, your troupe or your students, a little taste of all of the different props. It can be a really, really fun workshop to have a props sampler class. And then you can really get a chance to see what all the fuss is about with each prop. And like I personally, I have, you know, enough veils, enough baskets, enough swords. I have enough props that I can teach a class, so that way everybody can get a chance to try each one out. So that's probably my biggest suggestion, is try it out. See if you like it.
Well, this has been really useful, and we've covered so many points. So, you know, if people take just one thing away from this call, what would you want that to be?
Well, the most important point, I think, is that props can be a beautiful addition to an American tribal style performance set. They are accessible and at this point, very easy to get instruction. There's instructional DVDs out there, and give it a try. It's a wonderful, wonderful way to enhance any performance.
And if people want to learn more from you, how can they do that?
Well, they can contact me directly, and they can find me at www.thirdeyetribal.com. And I can get them in touch with any of the teachers that I have mentioned today and provide them any links to instructional DVDs. We also have a Facebook group. It's called ATS with Props, and you can search for that and join us. We have conversations. We share performances and just talk about the use of props in our American tribal style performances and classes. And you can, all of the people who I mentioned who have produced instructional DVDs are moderators for the group. So you can access them, ask them any questions. They'll answer the questions for you. We created it so it would be a central communication and conversation area for people who are either already using props in their American tribal style performance or interested in doing so.
And if folks would like to get a copy of your DVD, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. So my DVD is called ATS with Props. It covers the veil, the fan, and the basket. And it's really three DVDs for the price of one, which is what makes it so exciting. We each knew we could do our own project, but I love to collaborate. And so when I decided to make my first instructional DVD, I called Beth and I called Dawn and I said, hey, y'all want to come play? You want to make a DVD with me? And we had thought that we would just reduce all of our material to one DVD. But then we had so much great material, we decided to do a three-volume production. So for the ATS with Props DVD, you get one DVD about veil, one about fan, and one about basket. And for the low price of $45,
that's pretty good for a three-disc set.
I know. We were all together last weekend in Illinois doing, we also do a DVD with Props tour, and the three of us are happy to come to your area. That would be a great way to introduce prop use to your dance group or to your community, your state. And we were together this past weekend in Illinois doing a stop on our tour. And we figured that we probably had a year's worth of material for people to go through and master, maybe a year and a half, just on the one instructional DVD. So, and you can purchase that DVD also through my website at www.thirditribal.com. That sounds so corny.
And if folks are concerned about the expense of bringing out three teachers, could they invite just one of you to do your specialty?
They could. They could absolutely invite just one of us to do our specialty. And I can also get you in touch with any of the other instructors if you want to just contact me, or you could contact Dawn Rucker with Dianishma in North Carolina, or Elizabeth Fish with Tamarind in Milwaukee.
Excellent. Well, let's go ahead and open it up for questions and answers. So for those of you who are on the phone or Skype, you can press ** to unmute yourself. And if you're listening on the webcast, you can click on that little speech bubble button on the right-hand side of your screen and type in your questions. If you don't have a question, I'd also love to hear what your favorite thing that you learned from this call was, or your favorite tidbit. So please don't be shy. You can press **. And again, that's ** on your phone. Or if you're on Skype, that would be ** on the Skype keypad, not necessarily your keyboard. Folks, a minute to get logged in. Okay, I don't see any questions just yet. So if folks are still typing in or still looking into how to get themselves connected, let me just put in a little pitch for the Clubhouse in the meantime. We do take sponsorships for the Clubhouse, so if you'd like to advertise a product, service, or event here on the Clubhouse, we'd be happy to do that for you. If you're interested in sponsorship, you can get in touch with me at nadira@nadirajamal.com. Make this last call for questions. Again, you can press ** on your phone or Skype keypad, or type in a question in the box on the right side. Looks like we've got a caller in California. Hi, I see you unmuted, but I don't hear your voice.
Are you talking about me?
Yep.
Okay, I'm not in California. I'm in North Carolina.
Oh, sorry. Your phone number is showing up as in California. I'm sorry about that. So
okay,
who are we speaking to?
You're speaking to Rose.
Rose, thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you for having this. I'm currently just started taking from Dawn Rucker, and I was, I love working with props and stuff as a cabaret dancer, and just wanted to hear how that's incorporated into ATS, because I'm still learning the basics of ATS. But I just wanted to say thank you very much for doing this and putting this together, because I've just been sitting here absorbing everything, and, you know, my questions will show up sometime next week, I think. I can be a bit slow with that sort of stuff. But I have worked with some props in cabaret. I've worked with Kane. I've been playing with Veil, but I haven't actually gotten very far with that or fans yet. But I definitely, you know, I understand the whole you have to take into account what space you're using with your arms, because we've had canes catch each other before.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah,
and Rose, please feel free to email me or Facebook message me next week if any questions come up. That and Dawn also knows how to find me.
Yeah, thanks.
And we've also got a Facebook group for Clubhouse members, so if you'd like to ask in there, we would love to see the discussion there as well. You know, I'm sure you've all heard this rule, but, you know, if one person has a question, chances are 10 other people in the room do too. So I'd love to, you know, be the fly on the wall during your conversation as well.
Okay, thanks.
All right, well, thanks, Rose. Is there anything else you'd like to ask or say before I mute you again?
No, thank you very much, and have a lovely night.
My pleasure, and
thanks
for calling
Rose.
All right, if anybody else would like to ask a question or comment, you can press ** to unmute yourself. All right, it looks like that's probably it for tonight then. Well, thanks so much, Terry. This has been super geeky and informative.
Thank you. It's just my pleasure. I have been a fan for a long time and was delighted when you invited me to come and join you for the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse.
Awesome. And thank you, everybody, for coming. This is the end of our call, but that doesn't mean that the conversation has to end. As I mentioned a minute ago, we have a private Facebook group just for Clubhouse members. So I'll send out an email shortly with a link to the invitation. And again, this is a private group, so that means that there will be a slight delay. So if you haven't joined us in the group before, you'll have to request to join, and then I have to approve you, which can take a day or so. So don't worry if you can't post right away. And that email will also include a link to the call recording. So if you want to listen to this again and take more detailed notes, you can do that, as well as a link to Terry's website where you can get her DVD and more information. And the email will also include a link to our feedback survey. I run the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse, but I really want this to be for all of you. So if there are any topics or speakers that you'd like to hear from or any improvements that I can make, I would love to hear about that. Our next call is still TBD. I have a great guest and topic booked for you, but we haven't set the date yet, so I'm not going to tell you what it is just yet. So keep an eye on your inbox for the announcement. And the last thing I'd like to say is that this is the come on in kind of clubhouse, not the no boys allowed kind. So if you know somebody who would enjoy these calls, you can invite them to join us at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse. And until next time, happy dancing. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. For more geektacular resources, check out bellydancegeek.com.